This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Sieber. Good morning, Robert. How are you doing?
Oh, Peter, I had a busy, very, very busy weekend because we had more than 1,000 guests from all over the world.
Oh, what was that?
At our round table in Würzburg. Yeah.
Round table you had? What round table was that?
Roundtable. This is a service club in which I am involved, and we also talk about AI testing on the event because some participants recognized my voice. That's interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, yeah. We do some charity and some hands-on activities, and once in a year we meet. There's several festivals. The next one is in Tallinn, and in summer we're meeting in Kapstadt. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Oh, amazing. Very good.
What about you?
Oh, what did I do? Not sure. The winter came back here, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very strong. So here in the south of Germany, we have 10 centimeters, 15, what is that, in inches? Maybe 5 inches, something like that.
I don't know.
Of snow, I guess. Okay. Yeah, for those international listeners. For those people interested in skiing, that's a big fun. You know, we had a lot of discussion here, of course, if people were still supposed to be skiing, you know, especially in the Bavarian Alps, which are not that high. I guess now as the winter is back, that I assume, I haven't heard that many people did go into the mountains. We just spent time around our area here in the snow.
And I know what is your news today. Would you like to start?
That's actually the other thing that I spend most of my time on. Yeah, well, as you had heard already, so the autonomous driving inventor, Ernst-Dieter Digmans, and some of you listeners will already have heard, and we talk about it again at the end, he's received the Cross of Merit first class from the Federal President of Germany. And that news was, we knew that, you know, a couple of weeks, actually, because I have been involved. Probably I've been, maybe not the sole, I don't know, but maybe I've been the main driver for that. And then
you were the main driver, Peter.
Maybe,
you wrote so many letters. Yeah.
Maybe we will find out. But maybe we'll find out that there's also somebody else. But could be, yeah. And then I hadn't heard back from Ernst-Dieter Digmans. So over the weekend, that's the other thing I did, actually. Saturday morning, I started looking for telephone numbers. I asked you. You didn't have the number anymore. We must have had it, you know, because we visited him 3 years.
You organized that.
I probably did. But there you go. So then I started looking for the Digmanses in the telephone dictionary. And there were about 23, I think.
And they called everybody?
No, I did not. No, but okay. I did call one. And that took about 5-10 minutes. It was a very nice talk with a person, but I had said, no, we haven't heard of Mr. Digmans. So, and then I decided, why not just, you know, drive there, because I don't live that far away from him, and just see how he's doing. So we had a wonderful chat. The way that he put it himself, he is doing fine for his age. And I must say, we had almost a two-hour discussion that was very interesting, that went very deeply. He's still very strongly involved in research, not only specifically, it goes more robotics, it goes more into philosophy. You recall that we had an interaction with, is that Professor Metzinger?
Yeah, from University of Mainz. Yeah,
that's, for example, one that he is interacting closely with. But one step back. So for those of you that were not aware, that hadn't heard, so from 1973, Ernst-Dieter Digmans, he was a professor for control and regulation technology at the Faculty of Aerospace Engineering at the University of the Armed Forces in Munich. That's actually in the town where I live, not in Munich, but they call it Munich. It's a smaller town, doesn't matter. Neubiberg, it's called, and where he founded the Institute for Technology of Autonomous Systems. And he, interestingly, he initiated research on what he called seeing vehicles. Just think about that, 1973. That's not 30, that's 50 years ago. Now, in the beginning of the 1980s then, his team, they used a Mercedes-Benz a D508, D for diesel, I guess. It's a panel van, right? We call it Kastenwagen in Germany. And that was full of what they called 4D, dynamic machine vision electronics. And that way they could control the steering wheel, the brakes, the throttle of this panel van based on real-time images from the surroundings. Now, initially they tested it on an airfield, which is actually here. It's still available, but not as an airfield. It was already at that time not used anymore. And also on a new motorway, which is the motorway here from Munich to Passau, and that was not yet open to the public. Now, we're going to give you a link to the video for those of you that haven't seen it. It's really amazing. And that's where you can see this van passing by, and the guy in it, he's, you know, waving his hands and showing, you know, I'm not driving it. You know, this van is driving it itself. That was in the 1980s, right? 40 years ago. And at that time, also his team, they drove from Munich to Odense in Denmark. It's about, you know, 1,700 kilometers at speeds of up to 100 kilometers per hour. And then in 1990, they had also two Mercedes S-Class. That's very interesting. That's again Moore's Law, right? At the beginning, they needed this big van for all the electronics. And, you know, 10 years later, the electronics had been, you know, shrinked such that they could use the Mercedes S-Class cars. And they drove autonomously on the city motorway in Paris. So that's all that he's been doing. And there are so many other things around. And for those of you interested, and by the way, Ancita, he has also been a visiting professor at Caltech, also at MIT in Boston. And he did receive already a lifetime award from IEEE in 2016. So for those of you interested, not sure that we can. We did. You and I, we did. That's, I believe, 2019, at the end of the year.
It was in December 2019, I remember, because the wife of Ernst-Dieter Dickmanns, right, made the best cookies ever I had at a podcast recording. We were there the whole afternoon, I think, and after the recording, she served this fantastic cookies.
Which is more like, it's a typical thing people do around Christmas. They bake Christmas cookies, right?
Christmas something cookies, like, yeah.
I did remember on Saturday. I did thank her. For those of you interested in that interview, and we're going to make that link available to you as well. Now, that at the moment, because we started putting our podcast on YouTube as well. Now, it's in German. Now, would we be able to put it again on YouTube? And would that mean that it would get an automatic translation then? Or how does it work, Robert?
Yeah, it's possible to do that.
Why not? I mean, it's a history document. I really believe it is. Yep. You can hear from the horse's mouth.
Yes.
Now, that's a wonderful saying, I must say, because I'm gonna tell you one thing that you can hear from him in that video, in that podcast. Not a video, it's a podcast, right? Because, you know, he explains in our call, in our podcast at that moment, in our interview, his early thoughts behind what eventually then became to be autonomous driving, you know, in his youth. And he was actually born not too far away from where I was born, on the other side of the border, you know, Germany, the Netherlands, he on the German side. It's not that important, but he spent lots of time on the bench of a horse-drawn carriage, you know. So he would have been working in the countryside, and he was sitting on this bench, a horse in front of him, and he would be, you know, he would be tired. He would not pay attention. Maybe he would even fall asleep, and the horse would bring him home safely. That was his story, right? And I thought that was amazing.
I will never forget this. Yep.
That was amazing.
I think it's very interesting because great minds always worked on a farm, like Sepp or like Ernst-Dieter Dickmanns.
They really?
All worked on a farm when they were.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's where they come from.
Is causality? No, I don't think so. Yeah.
Probably not. But again, I mean, if the great minds at that age, I mean, Ernst-Dieter is a little bit older than Sepp is, but I guess we're going to have less and less people working on farms. So maybe the future great minds will not. But if you think that is possible, we haven't discussed it. I think it's worse because it's a historical document, and it would be wonderful if also people from around the world, you know, that they could just listen in, or in that case, yeah, I mean, you're going to hear the German if that's what you're interested in, but you would then be reading if you set your YouTube to the automatic translation. You can listen into Ansi de Dijkmans and the history of autonomous driving.
And I think it's very interesting because our German Wunderkind, we call that, Mr. Trun, this work from Ansi de Dijkman is also apart from the work which is Trun doing. So they are in contact, right? Is it right?
Not sure how much they are. We did talk about several. Well, I mean, they all know each other, right? One piece of information that I haven't shared yet is by Jürgen Schmidhuber. So they were very close together. And Jürgen was the first one. I contacted him and said, this is maybe interesting for you. And he says, very well deserved. And I know that they, you know, Jürgen was in Silicon Valley, not sure where he was doing a presentation. And that's where I believe, you know, Dieter was featured, kind of, you know, he was giving there 1 hour or something a presentation. I will also link, and we can provide that as well. I will put it on LinkedIn as well, a link to a page by Jürgen Schmidhuber on the history of autonomous driving. And that's where you can also see what role actually Ernst Dieter has played.
So my news is not so spectacular like your news, but Peter, it's very, very kind of you that you wrote these letters a lot. You wrote this letter since 2019, I think, after the interview. And 4 years later, now we are here.
Yeah, I did three attempts here. One was with the university, and then the next one was I do have a number of political contacts, weird contacts. I'm not political active at all. They are more from my men's choir where I sing. We don't go too in details. That didn't. And then the last one, and I did copy, and you suggested also because you had a contact there again, it was to the Bavarian state and the states of Germany. They are supposed to be looking at these kind of requests, and then they pass it on to the federal state people, and they then have decided, and the announcement was actually from November from last year, and the award hasn't been handed over yet. That's probably going to take place sometime in March, so we'll keep you up to date there.
Great. I did some research on the new AI powerhouse in Europe. Do you know the new AI powerhouse?
I can guess, but maybe you tell me.
It's Amsterdam.
Oh,
yeah. The news came out that 170 new PhD positions have been approved.
Oh, wow.
And another one, 87 million euros will be invested.
Okay.
And KSNUK is responsible for the budget, and we already had them on our podcast. And now comes my second news. You know, KS will be our guest in July in Austria. We do our AI in the Alps event. And we are looking forward to meet there with our industrial AI friends and guest friends from the industry. And we have 5 more tickets, and we are doing a little lottery. If you want to take part of this lottery, send us a message, and then you can meet us in the Alps. So it's an honor for us to have KS there. I think it's very, very interesting. We will talk about vision, and we also should talk about Amsterdam a little bit.
Okay, sounds great. We haven't discussed yet. What typically, Robert and I, what we do is after our every second week call, we look at our contents plan, and I haven't shared. I did share you the plan beforehand, but there's a person, Maryam Miradi. It's a coincidence that she also studied at University of Delft, but we just agreed on a March time slot. She's going to talk about explainability, time series, Python libraries. But that's interesting. It's not directly, but only indirectly related that she's from Amsterdam as well. What does that mean, Robert? These 5 tickets, are they, I mean, the people who are going to be there, they are not going to be able to come free of charge, or?
No, it's not free of charge. Right, it's only the lottery. They have the possibility to go there. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good.
So it's a nice group, 20 people, no PowerPoint, only discussion about AI in industry.
Sounds great. And you suggested they write you or me, best you?
Yeah, it's up to them.
Okay, looking forward to it.
Thanks. And I have one more news. We need to talk once again very shortly about ChatGPT, because there's an interesting article in the newspaper Times, and it's called OpenAI Use Kenyan Workers on Less Than $2 Per Hour to Make ChatGPT Less Toxic. And that's the old problem about digital workers around the world. We had some guys from Venezuela. We have this in Africa. And yeah, I will link the whole story in the show notes. What's your opinion, Peter?
Well, we had this topic before, 2 years ago, I guess. And at that time, Amazon, AWS? They have a thing which we don't understand here. They call it Turk, I believe, you know, after the Turkish, which we already at that time said that's almost like, you know, derogative. Why is that? I don't think it is with a negative sense, but nevertheless. And it's about at that time and others as well, not just AWS, I believe. It was about always for dividing between supervised, self-supervised and unsupervised. You know, and as long as you need supervised, so labeling, somebody needs to label. And most of us, you know, all do it all the time when we're supposed to go somewhere and then we're supposed to say what the word is, or we need to choose a boat from 9 pictures or whatever. We're always helping the labeling, you know, for the company who's asking us to do something. And already that time we had that discussion. That was a discussion about, on one side is high tech providing billions, earning multi-billions of dollars. And on the other hand is, you know, the people who get $1 or $2 per hour to do this kind of work. Now, on this topic of ChatGPT, and it's almost like, I must say, for a week, you know, and I believe you spend a lot of time on LinkedIn, maybe you also other ones, I exclusively LinkedIn, and it has been almost impossible to see one other message than ChatGPT, almost until the point where I thought, okay, I'm just going to stop reading.
I'm out now.
For a couple of days. Now, very important and this thing, and I did discuss, not directly, but on a higher level, also with Ernst Dieter again last Saturday on this topic. So he is very strongly now into this at a higher level as well, right? And we kind of agreed, I believe, that we and most of the AI professionals, the professional researchers, they agree that we need to get back to a combination of symbolic, you know, the original AI, which for 20, 30 years from 1950s, 60s, got into the AI winter, you know, talking about winter outside, and it didn't move on. And then came, you know, the sub-symbolic, as it's sometimes called, machine learning based, more statistics based. Now, ChatGPT is, or we thought, had been almost exclusively, but not completely, statistics-based. And that's why many times it's just a parrot. It sounds very authoritative, but it's many times saying crap because the parrot, you know, doesn't know. The parrot is not a human being and maybe has heard something somewhere and then somewhere else and then combines the sentences and tells nonsense. And we think that's very funny. Now, the big problem is that too many times ChatGPT does the same thing. You know, it tells things because it's just looking for the statistically highest probability next word, outcome sentences that are, for whatever reason, at a very high quality authoritatively, but tells nonsense. Now, the good thing, now what they haven't done, as far as I understand, so they haven't combined with, as many researchers suggest, the original symbolic, you know, graph-based symbolic approach, which is the way that we humans, you know, see things. There's a room and a table and outside is snow. And what is snow and how does everything relate to each other, right? Now, to make sure that the parrot, so to say, doesn't tell nonsense too many times and doesn't go into, as happened in the past, saying very bad things. You know, there have been a couple of, what was the one from Microsoft a couple of years ago? Teat, Twat, or what was it called? I'm not sure. So in order to make sure that that doesn't happen, now we find out, and that's the news, that they have been, you know, using people. They've used people to say, I don't know how that works. Maybe they get questions asked. And then before then the human says, okay, now I'm going to talk about very bad things happening in the world, war and anti-gender and all kind of other things. You know, they then have learned to provide, let's say, diplomatic answers, I assume. So maybe it's good that they do it. The way they do it is very questionable. And I think eventually we have discussed it. I think they need to, I don't know what they need to. They need to stop providing this. And that was the thing Ernst Dieter said in general. They put technology on the market way too early. The technology is not there.
I want to add something on this point.
Please do.
because I had a discussion with Marco Huber from Fraunhofer IPA.
Right.
It's a friend of ours. And he shared an article, I will also link it in the show notes, about the topic open source and AI. And maybe this ChatGPT, from an ethical point of view, could be not the end, but a point where open source is not as good as we think.
Oh, really? There you go. So is it related to what I say?
Yeah. That
because now people are using it who have no sense. I mean, is it about, I mean, what has been open source? And you are the specialist, and we had sometimes a discussion on it. So as long as it's being used within the business community, you know, and people provide new tools and applications and things, and then the end user, the consumer, in a 1 to 1,000 or 1 to 1 million relationship, they use those tools and they don't care how it was developed, you know, with open source or now at this time what they have done, right? And it's so weird, you know, that 2 years ago when they had the first version of their, what they call it, not ChatGPT, but their original thing,
GPT 3.4 or what?
But it was not called ChatGPT. It's the original.
I'm not sure.
Whatever. And then they said, oh, we need to be careful here. And then everybody was laughing. And everybody said, oh, this is a marketing gig, right? You know, you just say this because... And now I believe this is almost happening because now consumers who have no clue, they start believing the answers that are being provided by ChatGPT. And that's why. So interesting. Yeah, I believe they have put this technology to the market way too early. I saw a couple of answers by, what's the name of the OpenAI CEO, the young guy? Yeah, and he was talking about AGI, so the artificial general intelligence. And he was saying, okay, we're getting close to AI as a, let's say, as a robotic companion, you know, as a tool, I guess. As he was saying, that can help you, support you. Yeah, not sure. Interested in what is coming out from your article there. I'm not sure that they were doing the right thing here. I think that it's going to be a big backlash one way or the other.
Yeah, I have one more quote from the article. I checked it. AI industry culture of publishing its finding openly may soon end the need to end. And the guy you mentioned is Demis Hassabis. He's a DeepMind CEO.
Right, Demis, yeah, right, yep. Okay. Yep.
And that's interesting. AI industry's culture of publishing its finding openly may soon need to end.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't thinking of Demis at all, but there you go. Yes, I did see that. He is of the same opinion. And when he says something, that has a much stronger value than I. But I'm a big supporter of Demis. You know, I put him on the same level as Andrew and G, and of course with...
Yeah, I will link the article. It's also in the Times magazine to the show notes.
Okay, yeah, we completely agree. They have put this technology on the market way, way, way too early. It's not ready.
Perfect. Let's switch to the main part. And today we present a startup from Germany. I talked to Martin Schiele. He's the founder. And he had 50 minutes to convince me. So let's enjoy the podcast with Martin. Peter, it was a pleasure to talk to you. And once again, thank you very much for your letters you wrote. And
sure.
I think Hans-Dieter Dickmanns is very happy to receive this honor.
Yeah. Very much looking forward to. And we haven't heard yet, just as a closing note from my side, we did see that there is a conference which is actually taking place here in the state of Bavaria, right? I think it's supposed to be in English. And so we suggested that maybe we can be there. And actually, so the person in charge, so the minister in charge there, he's going to be there as well. So maybe we can be at that conference. And I'm very much looking forward to, and I'm still spreading the news around the world. I think it's important. And I'm so very much happy for Hans-Dieter Dickmanns that he is going to.
And you are also a little bit proud of yourself, right?
Well, yeah, but that's not the point at all. Yeah, I did put a lot of work in it and three times. And the last time we said, you know, all good things are three, we say. But I'm very, very happy for Hans-Dieter that he's going to receive this cross from the federal president of Germany.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Looking forward to. Thank you, Robert. Bye-bye.
We are going to try something new today. We want to present an industrial AI startup once a month. The guest has up to 50 minutes to convince us. And convince you. My first guest is Martin Schiele from AIUI. Hello, Martin.
Hi, Robert.
Great to have you here on the podcast. Please introduce yourself briefly, only in three or four sentences.
Well, thank you, Robert. Thank you for having me here. Yeah, my name is Martin Schiele. I'm the CEO and co-founder of our company, Artificial Intelligence User Interface, short AIUI. And yeah, we are delivering neural networks to our customers on-premise.
On-premise. So that sounds very interesting. I informed myself before we start recording, and you are not an AutoML tool, but an AI tool, hodgepodge from GitHub with a nice interface. Is it that simple? Explain your tool and the technology behind it, and what kind of input does the software need?
Well, okay, let's start over with, okay, it's not that simple.
Okay.
Yeah, where do we come from? I started as an engineer. I wanted to use machine learning for solving my problems for PhD and so on, and found out, okay, programming is a hard work to do, especially in Germany. We got not enough people who can do programming very well, so we decided to create a software with a user interface to make it happen that people without programming knowledge can use the common AI tools, okay, for deep learning. And so that led us to creating a software that is capable of taking the user data. You can train neural networks, can test them, and can deploy them later on. It's an AI management system where you can steer and orchestrate everything around ML and machine learning, artificial intelligence.
What distinguished you from other no-code solutions? Because that sounds like a no-code solution for me.
Yeah, first of all, you can get our software aims on-premise. That's very important to a lot of German companies right now because they don't really want to share their data in cloud solutions. And that's the unique selling point. And we offer not only a niche, we are able to serve solutions for time series, for text, for numeric values, for image classification, segmentation, whatever, for everything that is around artificial intelligence, also document processing, handwriting recognition, whatever.
But the idea is to scroll all open source tools regarding to AI and then building a nice interface.
Yeah, that's right. Because right now it's like the community is giving out a lot of open source tools. You can go to Hugging Face, you can find Git repositories where you find really good performing AI models doing specific stuff, even on TensorFlow and PyTorch. But yeah, that requires knowledge of programming. That's the problem. So we were building the user interface. We are integrating all the data flow structures you need to make everything convenient and try to find, okay, what do our customers need? Implement it from the sources from the internet inside our software and deliver it in a way that the people can use it without coding knowledge. That's mainly the part that you addressed. Yeah.
How secure is it to use these open source tools?
Pretty secure, I would say, because the only thing we take from them is the neural network. For example, if you got a big transformer like T5, Flan T5 from Google, it's a pretty new one, it's trained to do some specific tasks, and we don't take much more than the network itself.
Ah, okay. So in our last episodes, we discussed a lot the topic about foundation models and big models, how to use this foundation models. Is it a task for the future to find small items, small interesting features in these foundation models and use this for industrial use cases? Is it also a possibility for your company?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe in the future, but from what we see right now, it's more important to have a standardized way to use these tools. There is so much out there, so many possibilities people can use it.
So you're focusing on the software and the tools?
Yeah, right. So right now we are doing a lot of projects because many customers aren't ready to do it yet. They don't know what can AI do to their business. So we try to help them understand how to use it. And in my opinion, it will take up to 2 years until they wake up a little bit more.
Can you explain your tool once again and the technology behind it?
Okay, for example, if you got a use case like quality control assurance standard for industry companies, you get a product you create and you want to check it afterwards with a camera. So you're taking pictures. For example, if you use a BALAF system, you got a REST interface where you can send images through the network. and you use AI UI. You collect, for example, 200 images of your product, mark them as okay or not okay, or yeah, you use our annotation tool to annotate on these pictures what is wrong with the project for instance segmentation. And then you can train an AI algorithm like Mask or CNN. It's a very popular one. And then you got this trained model with your specific problem, your specific data, and can deploy it on an industrial PC, a personal computer, and can use this model then in combination with your hardware, in this case, the Belf camera. So you don't need to buy an extra hardware. You just make that hardware you got smarter.
And your software recommends the right algorithm, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
How do you do that? Because there are so many algorithms in the world, and how do you pick the correct one?
So all the time there is a state of the art in the time you start over. For example, if you would like to do some image classification tasks, you would right now use EfficientNet, for example. So the user is just picking this architecture, trains the model, and nothing more. You don't have to know about the other models that are out there. We will suggest them what is the best to use right now.
Okay, so that is your domain knowledge, that you know which are the best, and this is hard code programming, right?
Yeah, that's right. He or she can choose other algorithms. They can test it. It's our software is so easy that you can just choose another one and try if it's working better with this architecture. It's just in a matter of no time.
So it's not an AutoML, or what is the difference to an AutoML tool?
Well, AutoML uses either specific architecture like we do and trains with automatic parameters, or they try to figure out, okay, which solution might be the best way. Most AutoML tools that just use tabular data, as numeric data, they often don't use deep learning models. They use like decision trees or random forests. But we are specialized on just using deep learning models because they can handle everything. They can handle audio data, text data, everything.
And so I buy your software, then I will install it on my computer, on my... Do you need a GPU instance?
You don't need to. You can get the software for free first, and then you can see, okay, if you really need a GPU support and you got a GPU, you might have to invest some money. Okay, that's some upselling we do there. But you can use the software for free, but only with CPU power. And depending on your problem, if you just have some whatever classification tasks with a few data, you might not need any upselling. You can just use it from scratch. We did it with a lot of customers right now. But if you need to train, for example, an image classification or segmentation algorithm, you might need GPU training power, or it will take ages, right?
Can you describe your perfect customer? Which company do you want to reach?
Yeah, the perfect customer would be a partner like, can I just name one like Kuka, for example? Because they got a lot of customers, they got hardware, and they want to make this hardware smarter. So we deliver the software that has the capabilities to use existing hardware to make it smarter. And they got distributions, they got the customers. Or for example, another one, we are in contact with our article partners that help cities, for example, processing documents, like, okay, any kind of documents that are handwritten, for example. And we do this too.
Okay. Please give us, at the end, a use case, an industrial use case, please.
Okay. I would like to take one I can talk about from Cap Niles. Cap Niles is directly from the industry, and they create machines for grinding discs. So they create machines to grind metal. And they create these discs by themselves. So they got this steel discs, and they bring on this disc some diamonds. But in this production step, normally, yeah, there are some faults taking place there because the diamonds are not completely enclosing the disc sometimes. So you got space left in between, and this is an error, a fault. So in the last 40 years, they got one sitting in front of a microscope and checking all the discs by hand. This person was going to get too old, and they wanted to try out if they can automate it. So it's one of our first customers, and they bought a really cheap microscope. So this is another hint. So you don't need like a 7K expensive cameras. You can just buy one from Amazon for 100 euro. And they automated the process and were capable of just finding the faults by using our software in a matter of 2 weeks.
And now they are upselling this software to their customers, or what?
No, they are using... This is to distinguish, because they are using it to reduce costs on their side, so they don't have to hire another employee for this job. But there are other customers, but you can choose either reducing costs inside or make your product more interesting to other customers, and then Yeah, that's another case.
So what are your next steps with your startup, with your company? Are you looking for an investor or are you looking for new employees? What are the next steps?
Yeah, well, we are well funded right now. We have done a funding round and we're collecting more than 1 million in this one. And right now, we sure search for some employees because we got a lot of work to do right now, and for partners, companies that think about, okay, can AI be a part of my software solution, for example, for my hardware solution, and we can deliver the user interface that they can sell to their customers to make it happen on their own in the future.
I think it's very interesting, your business model, because you are not the AI guys, you are the user interface guys, right?
No, not really. You are partially right, because we are the user interface guys, but there's a whole lot of other work to do around that. You got a database, you have to pre-process the data, or the customers have to have capability to pre-process the data inside our software, because they are not able to do programming. And right now we are doing a lot of projects face-to-face with the customers. So we initially have to find the AI that solves the problem and then implement it into AI UI. This is our process right now. We don't go ahead and try to fit everything inside that is out there. We talk with the customer, find out what is the need, what are the requirements, and then implement it in our software and deliver it to all customers.
50 minutes. We are on point, Martin. Thanks a lot. We wish you a lot of success with your company. If you want to reach Martin, you can find him on LinkedIn, and the email address I will put in the show notes. And thank you very much, Martin. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure for me.